The T is in trouble. Ridership is down as much as 70%, and the MBTA faces a $300 million deficit. So now General Manager Steve Poftak is proposing deep cuts to service, including, among other measures, the elimination of all ferry service and some bus routes, no commuter rail service on the weekends, and trains running less frequently on the subway system. These changes, they could have significant implications for the Commonwealth's workforce. Call us. Are you relying on the T to get to work now? Did you before the pandemic and you're not now? If you're not riding it now, will you go back to the T at some point? Are you worried about fewer transit options, more cars will wind up on the road as we recover from the pandemic? I mean, there are questions. We want to know what you're thinking on the environment, on the economy. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or send us a tweet at Radio Boston. We've got a good group to help us talk about this. Jim Aloisi is the former Massachusetts Secretary of Transportation and board member of the group Transit Matters. And Jared Johnson is the Chief Operating Officer of Transit Matters. Jim and Jared, good to have you back on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for having us.
And I do want to note, we did invite Steve Poftak, the general manager of the MBTA, on the show today and yesterday, but he was unavailable. Jared, I'm just going to start with you and ask you straight up, do you think these cuts are the right call?
No, I think these cuts are, first of all, happening far too early. You know, the situation is really dynamic. And then also, I don't think that the T is taking into account the totality of these cuts. You know, before they've said that these cuts are permanent and that they will take a long time to recover from. And we've seen them pull back on that language. And, you know, quite frankly, I just don't buy it. Now, these cuts.
What do you mean pull back on that language?
They, you know, yesterday the general manager said these cuts are not permanent and they spent some time talking about building back. But, you know, they were right the first time. You know, you don't turn on service like a tap. It's not just, oh, you know, we've got some few more people riding the train today. Now let's get some more operators. You know, these operators, it takes months, sometimes over a year, to train these bus operators, these motor personnel, and these engineers for the commuter rail train. So this is not something that we're going to just recover from. And it's going to have really, you know, chilling impacts on a number of other sectors of our society as well. So, you know, I really want to stress that these cuts, you know, could have real permanent impacts.
Jim, I'm going to play some sound here for you from Steve Poftak. And the question on my mind is about whether there was another option. He said yesterday that it's not fiscally responsible to operate a system with empty trains and buses. Here he is.
Any savings achieved now in fiscal year 2021 will help address the projected gap in fiscal year 2022. Therefore, the MBTA needs to continue to take proactive measures now to close the projected gap that is rapidly approaching.
He also, though, Jim, pointed out, you know, massive differentials in pre-pandemic ridership and current ridership, and the fact that service has stayed at pre-pandemic levels. It does seem like from a revenue standpoint, that's a math problem that doesn't work. So were there other options, or was the T stuck between sort of a figurative rock and hard place here?
Well, there's plenty of other options, and the T's in a rock and a hard place of its own making. Let's talk about facts. The facts are that the federal government came to the rescue, and the T doesn't have an operating budget problem this year, this fiscal year. That means through June of next year, right, that problem was solved. So they're anticipating a problem after June 30th, 2021. And they're anticipating a problem because they're anticipating riders won't come back. And I guess they're anticipating that President-elect Biden won't enact into law an additional relief package.
Okay, so and let me just stop you there for a second, Jim. Right. Just to make it clear for listeners, I think what you're saying is that there was a federal relief package that applied to the current fiscal year, and that's a correct good deal of how the problem got solved. And you're saying they're assuming there won't be a second one in subsequent fiscal years. Is that right?
Yes, they're assuming that, and without evidence. The evidence now that we know that we have a new president coming into office is that there probably will be a relief bill. But let's also say they're also assuming ridership will remain low. Now, of course, ridership will remain low if the T decides to cut service. This is a prediction of their own making. Of course, ridership will be low if the T makes it confusing to people about when the next bus is coming or when the next train is coming, which is exactly what they're doing. So when the T says, well, we're anticipating a deep budget problem after June 30th next year, it's of their own making. Look, the governor runs the T, right? I mean, Steve Toptak runs the T day to day, but the governor controls it. The governor can move and act tomorrow to raise net new revenue for the T if he wanted to. Why doesn't he? So could the legislature,
join this.
But there's no leadership happening at that level, right? And that is part of the problem. That's part of the problem.
Join this conversation, 1-800-423-8255. Are you riding the T? Are you not? How do you feel about these service cuts? We've got Mary on the line from Braintree. Mary, go ahead.
Hi, I want to know what the T has done to cut costs before cutting service. Top management pay cuts, get rid of the consultants, and how about no retirement at age 50? Make it 62, 65 like the rest of us. I want to hear that first.
All right, Mary, let's turn to Jared. Jared, what do you know?
Yeah, I know they have identified cost savings. They've tasked their team with identifying cost savings, and our understanding is that they have actually found a lot of cost savings. On the executive side, that's a little bit tougher. Because you know you actually do need to have top quality folks there to run a huge agency. But I think the bigger point here is that these service cuts are not actually going to save that much money. We're talking about service cuts on the order of 25-35%, and we're talking about savings on the order of 8 or 10%. So this is not a fiscally prudent strategy. It's not going to result in that much of an impact on the budget, but it's going to have a huge impact on the budget of low income riders. And like I said, it's you know, like what Jim said, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, it's what we in the industry call a death spiral. You know, you cut service so people don't come back, and then people don't come back, so then you have a justification to continue cutting service, and so on and so forth. And we've seen that this is how Washington D.C. system went from a model and something everyone looked at to now a system that is still struggling to dig itself out of a hole from the mid-2000s.
Jim Aloisi and Jared Johnson, stand by. And listeners, we'll continue to take your calls at 800-423-8255. I want to take a minute to bring in another voice here. Mella Miles is the Director of Transit-Oriented Development and the T-Riders Union at Alternatives for Community and Environment. Welcome back to the show, Mella.
Thank you for having me. Good afternoon.
So Mella, bus routes are shortened. Some are consolidated. Some will be eliminated. Who gets affected by cuts to bus service?
The people who are affected are those who have no other option but to ride on a bus. I always say no one's on a bus just because they want to be on a bus in the middle of a pandemic. They're not out for a field trip. This is a lifeline to get to work, to go to their doctor's appointment, school, wherever else they need to get to. And the other folks, the people who are also on there may be undocumented. There are frontline workers. There are cleaners, those people who are cleaning up after us and trying to keep us safe from pathogens that could infect us and do far worse.
So, Mella, MBTA officials have said they took a data-driven approach. They tried to determine where to cut service based on keeping up service in areas with heavier use, operating as much as they can with things like bus routes in lower-income areas and communities of color. Are you satisfied with what they've said about their decision-making process? And do you think these proposals are done sufficiently with equity in mind?
I'm not satisfied, and I don't think they're necessarily done with equity in mind. Prioritizing the critical riders, as they keep saying, is something that they have lifted up. But at the end of the day, we're seeing that some of the bus routes that they are chopping up or cutting off, or even, for example, the Fairmont line right now, the commuter rail service, which is not on the chopping block, they're planning to cut the service off for the weekend starting in January of 2021. We also see buses that were on their bus network redesign and a better bus project for redesign being cut out, like the 18 bus, the 34E bus. And then going into the ride situation, where when they change the service area, then people who are not within the service area for the ride then become premium ride users and have to pay a higher price. It might go from $2 up to $5 per ride, and that makes people who have to depend upon the ride not be able to get to where they're going, which, you know, a lot of folks who are have different abilities, they may be not mobile to be able to walk, or they might say, like, they cut out the bus route of the 18 and they say you can walk to a train station, it's within a quarter of a mile. That's assuming that the person can walk. Those are the ones who are being highly affected.
Well, Mela Miles, I appreciate you bringing that perspective into the conversation today. For our listeners, Mela Miles is the Director of Transit-Oriented Development and the T-Riders Union at Alternatives for Community and Environment. Thanks.
Thank you.
Let's grab a couple calls here and turn back to Jim and Jared, 800-423-8255. We have Tony on the line from East Boston. Tony, go ahead.
Hi. One of the holes that they buried, the overruns on the Big Dig, one of the holes they used were bond issues by the MBTA. Why does the MBTA have to take on debt to subsidize people coming down from New Hampshire? Why not put tolls on 93 and have that subsidize public transit, which is more environmentally friendly and economically will develop the area?
Tony, thanks for that suggestion. Let's add George as well. George and Dedham, go ahead.
I used to take the T every day. Now I can't because working from remote. I just got to say, I know the T's in the corner like everybody else, and I just don't understand when people say raise revenue. That essentially means raises taxes on people during COVID and the pandemic. Just doesn't seem like a good idea either. So, you know, it's just more uncertainty from Congress that is causing this problem. And just like Jim and the other guests, I hope that the Biden administration will be able to put a deal together.
George, thanks for that. So, Jim, back to the revenue picture. You know, bonds,
sure.
Bad idea to raise taxes during COVID. So what are practical next steps that can actually happen, or are these cuts essentially inevitable next month when the board votes?
Well, they shouldn't be inevitable. Let me illuminate a couple of things. First of all, Tony from East Boston, my hometown, he's right about bonding. Here's the dirty little secret that is in the T documents. They're proposing to bond an additional $3 billion with the B dollars without any revenue to support it in order to maintain the facade of their capital program. That's in their own documents, number one. Number two, net new revenue is critical for the recovery of a sustainable transit system. If you're driving today and traffic congestion is rising every single day in metro greater Boston, if you're driving, you're probably working. So this idea that you can't raise revenue because it's a pandemic doesn't hold water when you realize that the revenue would be raised from people fairly, the ones who continue to work and continue to have revenue. So the governor's own plan to put a carbon tax on fuel called the Transit Climate Initiative. He should move on that. But as I said earlier, there's no willingness to move on it. Now, let me just say one other thing. Chicago isn't cutting service. The Chicago Transit Authority is not cutting any service. What makes Chicago different from Boston? I hear that the pandemic is in Chicago as well. I hear that the conditions are the same there as well. So we have to really wonder why it is that from an ideological point of view, the T decides that the path of least resistance is not to do the hard government work of raising revenue, but go back to a program of retrenchment that will only, as Jared said, create a circular environment where it's a pathway downward, not a pathway upward.
Jared, I want to turn to you, but I'm going to grab a call here first. 800-423-8255. We've got Amanda on the line from Waltham. Amanda, go ahead.
Hi. I was calling in regards to the ferries that are in Hingham and Hull. I think it's terrible that they're going to get cut. They're a critical part of the economy because many people that are in the trades take them into the city to help build places like the seaport. I grew up in a union family that people were commuting that way. It was environmentally friendly. And also many people move to the area specifically for that. So I think that even though people say, well, you can still take the commuter rail, that a lot of the commuter rail is being cut. And also the ferries go towards the Harbor Islands, which are a critical part of Boston's identity. And as far as even thinking about tourism as well, that people need to remember that that aspect could be played up post-pandemic. So it would be a real tragedy if they were.
Thank you. I'm going to double check on the ferries to the Harbor Islands. But let me, while we have someone do that, Jared, let me come back to you. I mean, larger questions about the economy, people's ability to be able to participate in the economy. I'm going to play a little sound to add to that for you. This is Steve Tolman, the president of the Massachusetts AFL-CIO, who spoke during the public comment section during the Zoom board, the Zoom call for the control board yesterday. Here he is.
Public transportation opens doors to economic opportunity. And the only way countless of people in Massachusetts have to get to school or work, it's important. Cutting service will deepen the longstanding inequities and stifle our recovery by blocking access to jobs for people who cannot get to work without our transit system.
So what about that, Jared?
Well, I think that Secretary Pollack and some of the folks at the MBTA, it seems that they know the cost of everything, but the value of nothing. From my perspective, he's absolutely right. You know, the T is about connecting people to jobs, to healthcare. One of the things that was really striking was, I know that they're saying, we're trying to prioritize, this service, and only X number of people are riding the train late at night. We shouldn't confuse relatively low ridership with low importance. There may only be a relatively small amount of folks riding some of the trains late at night or riding the trains in the evening, but these are the same folks that 6 months ago we were clapping for. We were calling them heroes. They don't want applause, and they don't want claps. What they want is some of the things that are beyond, the control of this conversation, good health care and good wages, but at the very least, they want to be able to get to work. And to not have to, either pay out half of their day's income in Uber or Lyft or inconvenience family and friends. I mean, another thing, just like the caller was talking about folks moving, specifically to some towns on the South Shore in order to use the ferry. It's the same thing all across the region. The governor's own administration has really pushed transit-oriented development as a strategy to help, get us out of the housing crisis. And now we're going to be sending the exact opposite incentive to cities and towns. We're going to be taking away the commuter rail service that these cities and towns are pitching, to developers and are using to sort of push back on concerns about traffic and overpopulation in their cities and towns. So this is absolutely an incredibly short-sighted decision on these cuts that are going to have permanent, long-lasting impacts.
So I'm going to go back to the phones here, and as I do, in response to Amanda, who called in a few minutes ago, the ferry lines to the Harbor Islands are not a part of these cuts, Amanda. We've got Dennis on the line from East Boston. Dennis, go ahead.
Hello. Thanks for the show. In talking about the debt load and so on and the amount of money that has to be raised through whatever kind of funding or revenue, my question is about the pension component of the budget. My understanding, and I think it's been reported previously in the press, that a T employee's pension is based on their final year of service. And I'm just wondering if we could get some clarity about that, and also just sort of dimension of how much of the budget is to fund pensions.
It's a good question, Dennis. Jim, can you help us with that?
I'm not going to be able to give you an exact number on the budget cost of pensions. It's significant, but in the course of things, it's trivial. The pensions have become another one of these sort of ideological talking points that is, if we completely, solve the pension problem tomorrow, all of our fiscal woes will go away. It's just not true. We need to focus on the reality that the T doesn't have enough money in its capital budget, and it's going to bond $3 billion without any resources to support it. We need to focus on the reality that the T's cutting service when Chicago isn't, because the T's not willing to raise net new revenue that it needs to sustain itself. It's not about pensions.
What is it? Massachusetts billionaires have, have earned $17 billion over the course of this coronavirus pandemic. That's a failure. That's a policy failure.
So what are you suggesting, Jared?
We need to have progressive taxation. I think it is a yes and thing. I think it is both. You know, user fees. You know, gas has dropped. It's 50 cents or 60 cents lower, you know, than it was at the beginning of this year. And as, you know, my friend Stacy Thompson likes to point out, people are far more impacted by geopolitical events that are happening in the Middle East and Russia. Those cause far greater fluctuations in the gas prices than a 10, 15, or even a 20 cent tax is talking about. But absolutely, I think, you know, we need to be we need to be capturing some of that revenue. We need to be asking some of the folks who have some of the wealthiest folks in the Commonwealth to pay their fair share. You know, their economic gains have come because essential workers took the T. And so I think it's only fair to ask them to help pay for this problem and to help fix this budget gap.
All right. So you've both alluded to the longer term budget gap, as well, on top of a $579 million gap for 2022, the Massachusetts Taxpayer Foundation testified to MBTA officials yesterday that by 2025, funding sources for maintenance, safety and modernization will start falling about $1 billion short of what's needed. I am hearing both of you call for increased revenues for different approaches. Are we running the risk of a starvation cycle for the T, given where ridership is and many people predicting it's not going to return to pre-pandemic levels for a long time? I mean, could we essentially see this T starve away? I mean, I know it seems dramatic, but is it?
Well,
I don't think it's that dramatic.
Yeah, I don't think it's dramatic. Look, again, it's within our control, and it's within the T's control. It's within the governor's control correct this problem. If you don't believe in public transportation, then you might not feel so bad if public transportation doesn't return to a kind of vitality and robustness that it should, right? You wouldn't use a blunt instrument like service cuts. You'd be talking more about service redesign and service redeployment. And if you believed in government being an actor, and if you believed in public transportation as a public good, you'd be trying to shape the future, not collapse in the front of the pandemic. You'd be shaping the future. It's not shaping the future to begin a process of service cuts that double down on more automobility, more auto congestion, less sustainability, less access for people, and frankly, less social cohesion, because if you're going to starve the T so that the only people using it out of necessity, and you've lost the benefits of an egalitarian system, you are going to threaten social cohesion in Metro Boston. So you've got to think about all of these factors if you're put in a position of running something like Metro Boston's public transportation system. You get to be proactive, not reactive, and we're not seeing any of that, and it's a huge disappointment, and it needs to stop. They need to correct course, and we're going to try, as others, to push the issue so that they do correct course.
Yeah,
Jared, last 30 seconds are to you.
Yep, absolutely. I think what's so frustrating is, you know, so what if the governor doesn't care about public transit? You know, we're not going to make him, this year, but he cares about housing. He cares about, or at least says he cares about, economic development and racial justice and the environment. The T is related to all of those things. And he, like, as Jim has said time and time again, he has it in his power to use the T for those things. And to your point about the capital dropping off, it's unconscionable to me that the T is spending $1 billion on South Coast Rail without, and now talking about huge service cuts, without a plan on the capital side on how they're going to fix a huge bottleneck that is going to cause the South Coast Rail program to run into a huge issue operationally.
All right. Well, that is Jared Johnson, the Chief Operating Officer of Transit Matters, and Jim Aloisi, former Massachusetts Secretary of Transportation, board member of Transit Matters. Always satisfying to have the two of you on. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having us.
Diana.